Alright, so here is the, here is what is I'm reading as far as, why the difference between the calendar days and 365, or I should say 360 degrees in a circle, is this. And the way it says it is, in other words, the sun advances 1 degree every day on its elliptical orbit. Persians had a leap month every 6 years to compensate for the extra 5 days. Moreover, the lunar calendar has a total of 355 days, while the solar calendar has 365 days. And which number sits perfectly between the two and is a composite number because it fits between the two? Yes, 360. So they compensated for that, according to what I'm reading here. And that's where they came up with 360. So they took the maximum, the minimum, and they divided in half and came up with that result. Now, Paul, because I'm unfortunately I can't hear Roy. You agree with the what? See, I'm not sure if this is very accurate what I'm reading, but I'm just reading it. Does that statement sound like it would be accurate, Paul, the way I'm explaining it?
It's plausible, but I don't know if it's true to history. Did they come up with these numbers and then everything started to fit in? You know, it just worked out that way. And we're gonna have 365 days because we have 360 degrees in the circle, or was it the other way around? I don't know which came first, the chicken or the egg. You know, I mean, it sounds good. The relationships are close, but I don't know how accurate it is. You know, you'd have to contact a real historian on this. You know, I mean, in the early days, they based everything on farming. You know, when things were growing and when things were ready, you know, they didn't have calendars and days. But, you know, it evolved over time, you know. So, back to you, Andy. And, Andy, usually you're a lot louder. So it might, you know, everybody's usually a lot louder on my radio. From Glen Oaks, so it might be something to do with the repeater. I'm starting to think that. I mean, either good or right. But usually, you know, everybody booms in George, everybody, but you're all a little, you know, supposed to be lower. Back to you, Andy.
82YYK.
And to explain, I think I know the nature of the confusion.
Okay, very good. Well, by the way, I'm looking at the signal strength. It looks the same. It's minus 69 dBm because I have a service monitor. I listen to myself. So that hasn't changed. Receive sensitivity might have changed, though, but not sure. All right, before Wesley, there's another station, KD2 something. Again, I'm not writing any of these calls down, so just please forgive me. That's KD2 station. Go ahead.
Thanks, Andy. It's KD2YYK. Let me just make sure I'm not interfering. All right, yeah, it's KD2YYK. When you were listing the divisors of 360, the reason you came up with 23 is because you forgot to say 90, which is a divisor of 360. Yeah, that's what I've been trying to say for about probably 10 minutes now, but I guess a lot of people have a lot to say. I'll hand it over to the other station who had a plausible response to this.
Okay. A full circle is 360 degrees because Babylonians used the sexagesimal system. It also represents the number of days a year, and also because 360 is highly composite, that's what you said. But the sexagesimal system, you correct my pronunciation in it, is based on number 60, which you also said. And it's the oldest invented by humanity. This system was, I believe it was Sumerians that introduced by Sumerians in 3rd millennium B.C. So people have been using that numeral system for millennia due to its merits. And we're trying to beat Bush's on why, and we did mention that this was the system that they were using at that time, and we just got it into a year.
KD2YYK.
Okay, I got the YYK, and another station got in quickly. Who is that?
KD2VHD.
Oh yeah, sorry, you came in before. Give me your name again, sir, because again, I'm not writing this down right now, and I forget names and numbers and calls. So, just give me your name, please.
Jim, PhD.
Okay, you're the first that I'm going to write down. The first name, okay. And you are. The next person in line, and Wesley, okay on what you said? Yeah, we're gonna get into hypothesis. Now again, hypothesis is what I've been reading here. Hypothesis one, I just did two, now hypothesis three, and that's going to be the area of historical reasons. Okay, and Wesley, you just I think you're reading the same thing that I'm reading, because it sounds almost word for word. But I'm going to read it anyway, so that's good. All right, Chris, the point is I'm making people think. That's what this whole Andy's Corner is about. I'm doing my job. All right, with that, the other station, not before Jim, please go ahead, WHCDL.
WHCDL, this is KD2YYK. I don't know if Roy can hear me, but otherwise, I trust that you can relay to him. I gotta go, actually. I gotta sign off. So I'll say 73 to Roy, Andy, and the group. But I just want Roy to know, because I was in line, I don't know, at the beginning I checked in with traffic, so just want to make sure Roy's aware. Andy, back to you.
Yeah, no problem. I'm sure, you know, next week come back and whatever traffic that you had or questions will be answered. That's fine. Good. Okay. Yeah, I'm just a little bit concerned because I don't know what's going on with Roy's signal. And usually it's pretty good. I know we have a new antenna up there, but unless there's something else going on which I'm not aware of. Okay, Jim, you're next on the list here that I just wrote down, finally started to write, so go ahead.
Thank you. I'm not reading from a book, but not to disparage anybody's input on a historical and mathematical nature of this question, because they all have some validity. The way I see it, the reason it's 360 degrees in a circle is because somebody said so. Period. And it hasn't been useful to change that since. So somebody said so, and that's what we do. That's the way I see it. And again, that doesn't disparage anybody's historical or mathematical reasons why it stayed that way, but that's the way I see it. VHD listening.
Okay, well, that's good. Very good that what you said, because it makes sense. It just stayed that way. So it actually leads me into the last hypothesis, which is historical reasons. So I'm going to read this, and then we can wrap things up, and then go from there. Because there's actually another context, but the Indian context, which is the last thing, which we'll see. Maybe I'll mention that. Anyway, Hypothesis number three, historical reasons. Another theory that suggests why a full circle is 360 degrees comes from the Babylonians, as I mentioned earlier. The Sumerians, if I'm saying that right, and the Babylonians famously used the sexagesimal number system, which Leslie just mentioned. So the sexagesimal system is one with a base value of 60, while the current system we use is known as the decimal system and has obviously a base value of 10, as we know. So once we reach the 10th number, we start repeating the symbols of earlier numbers from 0 to 9 to form new numbers. The 60 symbols used by the Babylonians in the sexagesimal number system, they're actually showing the numbers here on this page, which I can't even read. It's not even in a language that I understand because of the language that they used back then. So it goes on to say the Babylonians have 60 different symbols to make numbers with. Why should they use 60 again? Okay, here's the answer. Because 60, like 360, is a highly composite number with up to 12 factors. In the early days, in olden times, whatever you want to call it, I guess, you know, people used to, how did they count? They counted on their fingers. and they made up a number because you got 10 fingers. They came up with the number 10. So it says here, which is interesting, start by counting the knuckles of your four fingers, not your thumb. Don't do the thumb. On your right hand, and you'll come up to 12. Right? Isn't that the answer? Because you got how many knuckles? I got that. I stopped as soon as I heard repeated timeout. WHCDL, stand by. I had a feeling somebody was doubling with me. I had a feeling you'd be listening to all this in the background. Go ahead.
I am doing fine. I just point out there is nothing sacred about a decimal system, you know, where things wrap around with 10. Binary just uses 0 and 1, but it's a fully worked system, octal, hexadecimal. And yes, the reason we came up with decimals, everybody's pretty sure, is because if you have 10 fingers, it works well. But if some king came along and outlawed the number 9, you could develop a workable system from that. And octal, which is often used in aircraft communication, eliminates the numbers 8 and 9. You find aircraft IFF identification codes never use an 8 or a 9.
KD2FIU. Okay, very good. Ed, you got noisy for a while, Ed, also, which leads me to believe there's something going on, maybe locally. I'm not sure what. Although I did hear you, what you said, Ed. George recognized, too. Yes, I was not aware of that, by the way. As far as I know about the octal system, base 8, and, of course, hexadecimal, base 16, and so on. But as far as aircraft, I didn't... Another thing I was not thinking about, you know, the relationship between the two. But I'm gonna wrap this up pretty soon because it is 9:15, and it's good because you know, we're keeping the discussion going. And I'm sure in Roy's absence, I'm sure he's listening, and that's what this whole thing's about. Again, so with that, I started mentioning about knuckles on fingers, so I want to continue that. But before I do that, let me give it to George. Go ahead. WA2CDL. This is Andy's Corner.
KD2FIU. There's something missing here because a tremendous amount of what is being said was really refined by the Greek. The Greek societies, maybe 200 BC. And they were the ones who really began to define linear measurement. Linear measurement in geometry. Keep in mind, they had scientists who were working with it with half full degree and full degree measurements that are still a mainstay in engineering today. So it's not just the numbers based on planetary interaction with the sun. These people were mathematical engineers who were putting together what they learned from earlier societies in south of them and a little bit east of them in those parts of the world. This is hundreds of years of development. Still to say that it was the Greeks who put together the best definition of the infinitely closed line. I don't mean clothesline, closed line. That brings us to the circle, the square, the rectangle, all we can name in those shapes. Dimensions to describe them. And they're all 360 degrees. Now, the other half of the topic is having, H-A-L-F-V-I-N-G, having those topics to triangles. Tremendous amount of studies done by Pythagoras would still stand in teachings today. I'm not in front of Google. I'm in a dark room right now. I don't have a cell phone. I don't have a computer in front of me. I remember this from geometry in high school. KD2, FIU. Did I time it out?
No, I got you. Okay. All right, thanks, George. I think that was Wesley with very low audio. Was that you?
Oh, yeah. Okay, I'm going to follow this statement. The Babylonians and the Egyptians were the first who made the advanced mathematics stuff. We're talking about 600 BC or 300 BC, there were Babylonians actually. They've written it in Akkadian language with a stick on the, what did they use, clay form books, whatever. So the most striking feature of Babylonian mathematics is that there was a base of 60 counting. However, the first Babylonians didn't have a symbol to indicate the absence of the number in a position which made their numbers ambiguous. So we would compare it to the modern day. An example that would be 1001, let's say. So we use zeros to indicate the absence of the number in given position, but the Babylonian wouldn't just write 11, so they would have to use the context of the usage to figure out just what number is to be being referred to. There was also a problem with trying to find, understand their science. But much later, they used that symbol was developed and indicated the absence of the number. Let me drop.
Wesley, the next time you want to talk, ask Net Control.
Sir, you are known from correcting me when you are not asked to correct me. Don't do it again. And don't put your career on me. Any longer. Thank you, sir.
You were speaking while I was speaking.
No, George. Now it's Wesley. It was after you stopped. All right, let me just, because I want to wrap this up,
because there's a few more things I do want to mention, and then I will officially give it back to Roy. Hopefully he'll be able to get in. All right, so let me just take a pause. Okay, I appreciate everybody's input, which is good. I just didn't want to get too deep with this, because we can get on a deeper mathematical, whatever you want to call it. not tantrum, but it could be that. So, anyway, I started to say, okay, and I'll just finish this up, and then you guys can discuss it on your own, but I think the topic is interesting because there's history involved, and it's a discussion, and it is the technical net. So I'm trying to keep it sort of technical in that way. So just keep that in mind. And I'll have others in the future that I'll come up with. As I mentioned earlier, when the Babylonians had 60 different symbols to make numbers, okay, so the question came up is why should they use 60 again? And because of the 12 factors. Just as we can count 10 in our fingers for the decimal system, we can always count up to 60. We can also count up to 60. Okay. So a little experiment is, start by counting the knuckles of your four fingers, not your thumb, on your right hand, and you'll come up with the number 12, right? Because there's three knuckles per finger, and you got four fingers, so 3 times 4 is 12. Now, on the other hand, raise any of those fingers to remember that you finished one iteration, and got the number 12. Now, repeat the same procedure as many times as the number of fingers remaining on your left hand. The number you will end up with is 12 knuckles times 5, which is 60. So that's where that came from. Again, it's a little bit of history. This is historical. Okay, that's why I'm reading it. So it goes on to say, but anyway, why 360? So here's a little bit of a thought here you could visualize. If we were to draw an equilateral triangle with the length of sides equal to the radii of the circle and place one of its vertexes at the center of the circle, then we could fit a total of 6 such equilateral triangles inside the circle, which I can see right here. It makes sense. Since the Babylonians used the sexagesimal numeral system, they considered each triangle to have a base value of 60. Thus, 6 triangles times 60, base value, again, gives us a value of 360. Okay, I unkeyed. You didn't miss anything. All right, so now you can see where that came from. So a total, now I can see here on the pictorial that they're showing me. You got 6 triangles, each one with a 60 inserted. So a total of 6 equilateral triangles of size equal to the radii of a circle can be fitted inside it. Each triangle in the sexagesimal system was given a base value of 60, so 6 triangles times 60 equals a value of 360, which I just said. Okay, that wraps that up. Now the Indians, this is the last part of it. Okay, so now after I'm done, you guys can ponder all this and maybe rewrite the book on it. they go into the Indian context where it says there's even evidence that a circle in the Rig Veda, I'm not sure what that is, from India was divided into 360 parts, 12 spokes, 1 wheel. Novels 3. Who can comprehend this? Or should say, on it are placed together 360 like pegs. This is just an excerpt. Okay. All right. I'm reading something here, and as I read it, it's not. Next time someone asks you this question, I hope you have something to say. Now, here's a little quiz for everybody. You can do this on your own. Want to check how much information you retained from this article? Okay, here's a little quiz. And they're going to give you a suggested reading. And the question number one is, there is evidence that a circle in Samaveda from India was divided into 360 parts. And that is true or false? Okay? And the answer is false. And there is evidence that the circle in the Samaveda from India was divided into 360 parts, which is false, which is the correct answer. The next question, if there is a question here, next, okay. How many divisors does 360 have? Okay, as we said, the answer is 24, and that's how many it has, 24 divisors. And then the last question, how many symbols did the Babylonians have to make numbers with? Okay, and the answer was, as you know, 60. So that's the three questions to ask yourself with the three answers I just gave. Okay, with that, I'm wrapping it up. It is now 9:30, so we spent a good hour on this, which I'm sure... Okay, as long as I don't keep timing it out, WA2CDL, you're listening to Andy's Corner. As I started to say, I hope Roy appreciates the fact that we could be used up a good hour for this, and there'll be more to come, because I will look up some information in the archives and come up with some interesting questions. But, again, guys, it's food for thought. You can do whatever you want with it, of course. It could be meaningless, it could be meaningful, however you want to use it. It's just information. With that, let me give it to Roy. Hopefully, Roy, we can hear you. We'll see what happens. And good night. I have to go back to work. So 73 from Andy's Mini Corner for an hour, WA2CDL. Roy, over to you.
Okay. Hopefully you can now hear me. I've been trying to get through EchoLink. But you have to leave the carrier dropping, guys. So tell me if you hear me at least this way.
You're fine, Roy.
I hear you. Loud and clear.
Okay, you have to keep in mind that this is through EchoLink, so there's going to be all kinds of delays. And if anyone keys up, I'll be locked out of the system. I don't know what's happening. I really don't think two different radios with two different antennas failed at the same time. I think that I'm just far enough out in Brooklyn that something wonky's happened to the repeater with its receiver sensitivity down here in Brooklyn. So I'm going to try as best I can to operate through EchoLink, but you have to remember to let the carrier drop so that I can gain access to it again. Otherwise, you'll lock me out like you did for the last half hour. Okay, one of the other little strangenesses of this link is that it takes a long time to reestablish receiving signals from you going through EchoLink. So anything that's said for the first 10, 15 seconds, I probably can't hear it. EchoLink seems to be muting it. So keep that in mind when you respond to me.
KD2VHD. Jim, KD2VHD.
Yes, hello, Jim. I hear you. What do you have to tell me?
Well, you are coming through now with whatever difficulties. I have to compliment you. You are the king of all net controllers, and we missed you while you were gone. Sorry to be stumbling over you. I remain convinced on the circle 360-degree thing that somebody said so, and we all work with the residue of that as best we can. And I will remind everybody that this is, I think, intended to be a fun discussion. I think it's fun. I think it's a lot of fun. So something to keep in mind. And I think Ed had an opinion that paralleled mine a little bit, and that was pretty cool. I thought that was good because I'm a noob in this stuff. So I'm going to check out of the net for right now because obviously the difficulties. Great hearing you guys, and nice to see that out of difficulties, the system still works. KD2VHD, listening.
Very good, Jim. Yeah, radio finds a way. It's very kludgy. Again, I don't think it's my radios. When the first one went out, I said, geez, maybe the antenna went bad. But two antennas with two transmission lines, I don't know. That's way too coincidental. Just touching back on, I thought Andy had a great subject tonight. I wish I could actually have been able to add my 2 cents, so I'll add a 1 cent. I tend to agree that the 360 probably is lost in the mists of memory, that there's no definitive answer to that. I do, though, want to point out that although sexagesimal 60-base numbering was a Sumerian-Mesopotamian invention, the Egyptians used it as well, and thought is that the Egyptians probably decided on the circle being 360 degrees. They were much more advanced in geometry than most of the rest of the world, and even Pythagoras and such, I think he did his work in Alexandria, which was a Greek city, but it was a Greek city in Egypt. If you go back to the days of good old Mesopotamia, the Sumerians sort of thought pi was equal to 3. So they weren't the great geometers of the age, but they did invent the base 60 number line. I put up some things on my link page, by the way, an article that pretty much restates things, and the Sumerian cuneiform for the numbers 1 through 60 for anyone who's studying Sumerian cuneiform. So I just wanted to add that. It's on the link page.
Lori, WHCDL, just come back and I'll mention something.
Okay, consider me coming back. I'm still operating on Echolink. I tried both of my radios and, you know, didn't really get very far. I assume that there's something strange going on the repeater, and hopefully when the wind settles down, the antenna will settle down as well.
Okay, well, if I hear the knowledge from the Echolink, I'm assuming you're hearing me. Okay. Yeah, you know, my apologies. I didn't expect the repeater to be in this condition tonight. I'm kind of disappointed. Because I know you wanted to add the comments at the time, and I keep forgetting myself, even though I'm on Echolink, that you got to pause, because I know there's a lot of latency in the network. So, sorry about that. Okay. We'll have to see what's going on with the repeater. I don't know yet what it is. This happened before, by the way. Maybe even on a TechNet. Not too long ago, so we'll have to look into that. All right, but I just came back on this to tell you, though, Roy. Thanks for letting me in, and we'll continue. We'll have some fun with some more discussions. All right, with that, 73, and talk to you next time. AC2GS, WHCDL. Have a good night.
Yes, Ed recognized, Wesley recognized. Again, we got to turn our timers slower because if anyone keys up, and then I'm completely blocked. But Ed first and then Wesley.
Okay, I just thought it might be a good time after your talk about, you know, the Egyptians and everything, just to remind the listeners that the symbols we use for numbers today are known as Arabic numerals. This dovetails very nicely with what you were saying, Roy. That's all.
Okay, very good. That's a very good point to make. The golden age of the Muslim civilization was during the European medieval age. They did a lot of great things. They invented algebra. Algebra, beginning with the letters AL, is obviously an Arabic word. They wrote a lot of great works on the subject. And although they introduced the Arabic number line and the number zero to the Europeans, they themselves apparently got the concept of the zero from the Indians. India had the zero as part of its place system before the Arabs had. So it went from India to the Arab countries and then to Europe during the medieval times.
KD2FIU.
Okay, Wesley recognized, George recognized, Wesley went first, so your comment now, Wesley.
Okay, yeah, I was trying to make a point about Babylonians and Egyptians, where I had a problem with George's statement, but he interrupted me in the middle. I would kindly ask him to not do it again. When I said, let me take a break, let me recycle the repeater, don't interrupt me. Nobody asked you to do so. So the Babylonians and Egyptians were the first to really make this strides in advanced mathematics. However, out of two, the Babylonians were first. That is taken from the scientific paper. I can give you the link for it. Until the 3000 BC, there was no much information about steps in mathematics. Let me drop. The texts were written in the soft clay and baked into the stone tablets. Some of those tablets were as old as 2000 BC. However, the majority of the ones recovered so far were from period from 600 BC to 300 AD. And we don't discourage, we're not trying to put omit the Egyptian development in mathematics, but the paper was by a science history, and I have a link for it. But anyhow, back to you, Dr. Ray.
Well, I mean, ultimately, this is all supposition. We don't know, and I started this out by saying we don't know. It's in the mists of memory, but the Egyptian civilization was not that much younger than the Mesopotamians. And once again, I will give you that the 60 base digits was a Sumerian invention. The Egyptians did a lot of geometry. You see it with the Sphinx. You see it with a lot of edifices. Whereas, unfortunately, the Sumerians weren't real great builders. Most of the stuff that wasn't clay tablets have sort of dissolved, and archaeologists are kind of undigging them. So, who knows? But there are clay tablets from Sumeria that suggest that pi was equal to 3, which is not right, and hopefully they learned better as time went on. Now, keep in mind the Bible itself. If you look at Kings, I think 25, they also suggest that pi is equal to 3. They describe something circular with a diameter of 10 cubits and a circumference of 30 cubits. So they don't quite have their math right either. So I don't know. We'll never know. But, you know, it's interesting to discuss it, in my humble opinion.
Well, a little problem with that. The division of the circle into 360 units originated in Babylonian astronomy, and this was used to divide each of 260 parts, degrees, into 60 more parts, and so on. And the astronomer Ptolemy followed the Babylonian practice, not the Egyptian practice. So we may say that it is widely recognized, or there is wide recognition for Babylonian as the contributors into the mathematics and the science in it, and they are known as the first one that made the strong system to follow. Back to you.
Well, once again, you know, we're never going to solve it. I'll give you one paper. You'll give me another paper. I'll give you another paper. I mean, like I mentioned before, Pythagoras spent a good amount of his time in Alexandria, which is a, although it's a Greek city, it's a Greek city in Egypt. So there's a lot of mixing of cultures. It, you know, I mean, it's not like the iron, you know, it's not like the old Soviet Union type of thing where things are walled off. So you give two civilizations rather close by were trading back and forth and doing all kinds of things. There's even a story that's totally unproven that prior to the sexagesimal number system of the Sumerians, there were two kind of primitive versions of civilization in Mesopotamia. That's the area between the Euphrates and the other river down there. And that one used the 12-digit number system and the other used the 5-digit number system. They counted on one hand. And in order to trade things between the two, they came up with a unified 60-base numbering system. But again, this is all kind of waffly, questionable, open to interpretation. We're not gonna figure it out tonight. I can assure everyone of that.
Yeah, but there is a statement that came on this repeater, which is totally undisputable. We have it because somebody said so. That is true. Somebody in the history said so. They had the reason for it, and reason is part of science. And that's why we had the system. So based on my understanding, there is no way to fight with that statement. Back to you, Dr. Roy.
Yes, that was said by Jim, and I agreed with him. But, you know, it's always nice to kind of move the pieces around, even if you know you're in checkmate anyway. Again, once we get a time machine, it'll be rather simple. We'll go back, and once we figure out how to speak Sumerian, we know how to read Sumerian, which amazes me endlessly. I actually have a book on learning cuneiform, which has that table of digits that I put on my link page that I is available for everyone. Cuneiform, very interesting written language. Don't have the faintest idea what it sounds like, but we'd have to, I guess, ask a Sumerian. I think Akkadians and Sumerians and Babylonians were a fascinating culture. It's a shame that we don't have more information about them. Gilgamesh is a great story. They have a great flood story. They have a Genesis story. One would say that there's a lot of echoing in the Bible from Babylonian mythology. Fascinating subject.
Well, definitely, I do agree with that. It's history is one of my favorites, especially history of the science. So, and I believe it's a time for George to respond. And George, please don't pick on me with your career. At least this is my assumption based on my software. And to exchange, you did it in the past.
Okay, George, you got the floor. Well, nothing heard from George. I guess he stepped away. I'm going to try my best to run the net, despite the echo link. Everyone just keep in mind the delay factor and such. Next on my list of check-ins earlier tonight, I didn't think it was going to go quite this long. It was designed to be a mini Andy's Corner, is Alfred, N2DYI. So, Alfred, if you're still out there, please tell me what your question or your topic for tonight is.
Well, good evening, Roy. This is Patrick, actually. I'm not sure where Alfred came from, N2DYI. Yeah, I do have a question. I think I know the answer, but just want to get a second opinion. I am interested in running 220 on a tri-band antenna along with a dual-band radio. So triplexer, right? But I've only got two radios. So best practice, should I run a diplexer into a triplexer so I get the dual band single port into both 2 meters and 440, run that whole mess into the 2 meters and 440 side of a triplexer, and then put the monoband 220 radio on the other side? Or is there a better way to do that? And also, any resources for active repeaters in the New York City metro area that are actually active on 220? I've looked on the NY repeater directory and on repeater book, but I really don't know what's good. In 2DYI.
Okay, that's an interesting question. You can do it that way. What I would consider trying that would be far less expensive is if you use the triplexer, then take the, I assume one of your radios is capable of 70 centimeters, 2 meters, and it has one antenna input. You can use a splitter hooked up backwards to merge the two feeds from the 70 centimeter and the 2 meter and put that into your 2 meter, 70 centimeter radio, and then obviously the one remaining output goes to the 220 radio. As far as repeaters, I have always had that problem in that you can find repeater lists all over the place, but no one will give you any idea whether they're active or inactive. Now, when I first got licensed, I sat down and listened to the entire spectrum, and I actually wrote something for the New York City area. If you go to my other club, KC2RC, there's something called Roy's Hitchhiker's Guide to New York City Repeaters. Unfortunately, it's only 70 centimeters and 2 meters. But I don't know of too many people who actually took the trouble of listening and then writing little critiques. People found it very useful for 2 meters and 70, but since I never had a 220 radio, I never actually put any entries there. So that's going to be a big problem. It's more of word to mouth or simply trying it out yourself and seeing if there's any activity.
Okay, yeah, I kind of figured that was the case. So any recommendations for splitters, if I can do it that way? I wasn't sure if that was... if that was a safe thing to do, but it makes sense. As long as there's an impedance match, I guess, on both sides, it shouldn't be a problem. Or should I just build one? Yeah, I've scanned around on 220 a little bit, and I've heard a couple of things, but not a whole lot. And it's just a matter of, well, how much is this just not active, and how much is it that it's not active because their repeaters aren't online. So, yeah, just guess I have to experiment a little bit.
Yeah, unfortunately, other than either finding someone who's obsessive compulsive or doing it yourself, I don't know the solution. I would just be very, very cautious. If you get a splitter, splitters come in all kind of price ranges. So you ultimately, I assume, plan to be transmitting. So make sure that the splitter is rated for those amount of watts. You don't want to blow it out because there are a lot of very inexpensive splitters that are meant purely as a repeater, as a receiving device. So make sure that if you find a splitter that's rated significantly more than the watts you intend to inject into your antennas.
Yep, that makes perfect sense. Definitely appreciate it, because I wasn't sure. I had seen what you said, that you could use a splitter, and I've also seen that it's recommended to feed a triplexer with a diplexer, and that seemed a whole lot more expensive. So thanks for the clarification on that. Yeah, probably what I'm going to do is just, I've got a radio here that has more memory channels, and it's a monobander. It's got more memory channels than we have frequency pairs for repeaters on 220. So I'm probably just going to end up programming everything I find on the NY repeater directory and just taking out everything that doesn't work. That's probably what I'm going to end up doing, but definitely appreciate the help on that. I guess that's all I have. I have checked into the KC2RC repeater a couple of times. Not too often, but I've listened more than I've talked, so I do definitely recognize your voice and your call sign from there. So good to hear you over here. And back to net, into DYI.
WS1.
Yes, Paul.
Like the Daiwa. The Daiwa splitters. They're good. You know, I mean, I guess they're up to probably about $26 or something now. I got mine many, many decades ago, probably $19 or something back then.
I think they've gone up in price. I'm not sure, but I think that was the brand splitter that I used for a while. And I think I had to get them imported because they just weren't available. There were no distributors in the United States. I think I had to go through eBay, and they cost me something like $80. So if it's the same thing, and I agree with you, it's a very high-quality material. The last thing you want is these very, very, very cheaply made ones that are sort of designed for just splitting a receiver signal on, you know, two FM radios or such. But, yeah, that certainly is a good quality splitter.
Okay. I know I see MFJ as them. I don't own one by MFJ. But it kind of looks like the same thing. I wouldn't be surprised if it's made by the same company and they just sell it, put their name on it. But I don't know that. Back to you, Roy. WS2N.
Okay, very good. I haven't looked. I think I made that purchase about 4 or 5 years ago. I haven't looked to see. MFJ, you know, sometimes they'll buy from the same manufacturers, but sometimes they'll find a knockoff in China. And, you know, they've always, you know, I mean, they can be a very useful company. They stock a lot of different things that most manufacturers have stopped selling. But their quality assurance is kind of iffy. So I tell people almost as a joke, but in reality, whenever I get MFJ equipment, I always do the rattle test. I pick up the box and I shake it real hard and I listen for any rattling, but I still unscrew the chassis top and take a good look inside, make sure there's no loose nuts, cold solder joints or what have you. But, you know, they're okay, but you have to understand that every so often you get the booby prize.
Okay. I have one MFJ piece of equipment here, the electronic Kia, iambic Kia, and it's lasted since the 1980s, so I'm lucky with this thing, that's for sure. It works great. But yeah, I know MFJ had that reputation. But maybe, you know, that was years ago. I think they might have come around. I've heard people saying that they buy this stuff with no problem nowadays.
Okay, I mean, it might be possible. I mean, they have changed some of their practices. Back around 12 years ago, they were using prison workers to build their things. And I think that was one of the problems, both that they didn't have good quality assurance and they had workers who really didn't want to do it. So I think they switched to college students and just local people trying to make an extra buck here or there. So, yeah, I've heard better things, but, you know, it's always good to be a little wary. It's not stopped me from buying a product from them, but I always are cautious. I remember once the documentation with a product was really terrible. It was kind of 10 years out of date, and I called them up, and one of the guys truthfully told me I could suggest how to set it, but if it blows up your radio, you're going to blame me. So I'm not going to give you any suggestions. So with customer service like that, how can you go wrong?
82FYU.
Okay, Paul, you doubled with George. But, George, what would you like to say?
Or how can you go right? But anyway, they make great mobile antennas, and they do make very, very good test equipment. And that's my experience with them. So I won't argue. They can, and there's a lot of bad points and there's a lot of good points. Remember, they're trying to market everything. So that was what I had to say. KD2 WFIU. Back to you, Roy.
Okay, I agree with you, George. Like I said, they have a very, very, very wide selection of items. They are able to make a profit off of these things, and that's a good thing for the hobby. So I just caution people that, you know, just check on the quality every so often. Make sure it's quite up to snuff. And by the way, George, just want to remind you again that unfortunately going through EchoLink, I don't hear you. If you key up the repeater immediately when I stop talking, I don't hear you for about 10 seconds. You have to wait for the courtesy drop of the repeater. That means that I'm hearing you again.
Yeah, I do. I'm waiting on that, but I have some local interference. Thank you, Roy. KD2FIU.
Okay, very good. And thank you, Patrick. I'm sorry I got your name wrong. I will write it into my records that I fastidiously keep for the technical net, and hopefully won't get it wrong in the future. Let me move on to the next person. I hope they're still with us. Hopefully I got the name written right. Marvin, KC2GZC. Marvin or anyone that sounds like I'm talking to Marvin, please, if you're there, respond. Okay, I don't hear anything. I will try one last time. I'm sure, you know, he checked in at around 8:10, 8:15. It's now 10:02, so I could understand you'd be distracted and move on to something else. But, Marvin, if you're out there, KC2GZC, I believe it was, and if you're still around, please respond. Okay, I assume that Marvin wasn't able to stay with us. I believe Sam signed out. I heard him. My reception, by the way, is perfect. All my radios are receiving everyone's signal beautifully. It's just getting into the receiver of the repeater that seems to be a problem. For some reason, for two different radios, two different antennas, you know, I mean, the only thing in common is the location, I guess. But anyway, but I'll just throw it out. Sam, if you're still out there by some miracle, KD2YYK, feel free to respond. Okay, I thought as much. Anyway, this is AC2GS. My name is Roy. This is the Limark Technical Net. I am operating through our EchoLink, and I appreciate that the EchoLink is working as well as it is. I regret that I think actually people are receiving my stream. Since I'm going through this circuitous route, it's still generating an audio stream, so I'm glad of that, and I guess that's indicated by the fact that there are people on the audio stream that haven't logged out, so I'm glad of all that. So once again, this is AC2GS, this is Limark Technical Net. If you have any other questions or comments or topics, please feel free. Just remember that you got to put in a little bit extra delay so that EchoLink will tolerate us all. So if there's anyone out there with any comments or questions, give me your first name and your call sign.
Patrick Sheehan.
Yes, Wesley.
Okay, the SWR is numerical value used to measure efficiency of radio waves transmitted through the antenna. So, SWR 1.5 means what in percentage of emitted signal? How many percent? And to each year.
Well, I mean, the best way is to look it up in a chart because I don't memorize all this. But surprisingly, although people get very anxious if you tell them that you have a visuar of 1.5 to 1, it's probably transmitting or it's probably reflecting no more than 5 to 10% of your total signal. So the overwhelming a portion of your signal is getting out and radiating to your antenna. The standing wave ratio indicates, produces reflections, and so it indicates the efficiency of energy transfer from the 50-ohm transmission line to the antenna's radiating portion. So that's how I would kind of describe it. But even at 1.5, you're putting out a significant amount of your transmitted power. Very little is really reflected back.
Yeah. I'm talking about quality of an antenna. Those are actually three major factors for judging the quality of an antenna. But I'm not going to go to it deeply. Two questions. One is 1.5 means in percentage.